You don't get them girls loose, loose. You don't get the world loose, loose. You don't get money,
Mr. Worldwide.
But you are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Well, at least there was the Wiener Dog races at halftime. We got that to talk about. That was apparently a lot of fun. I only watched bits and pieces of it. Gerard, how much of that did you take in?
I saw a couple of heats, and that was about it.
Okay. Well, we had to have something that was actually, we felt good about the first half. Gerard, why such a bad second half? You've analyzed it. You've broken it down. Give us answers.
Really, Vic, we said it going into the game. You're going to have to match the emotion of the Detroit Lions. They're a desperate team. If you see guys hugging Calvin Johnson prior to the game, and I mean everyone from coaches to trainers to all the players, thank you, Calvin, for going out there. That was a telltale sign that this game meant a lot to the Detroit Lions, and they showed that. Granted, they were down in the first half, but coming out in the second half, one play stands out to me more than any, Vic, and it's the following. Matthew Stafford does a scramble. The level of emotion that he showed after picking up that first down seemed to galvanize the rest of the team, while you had the Browns on offense doing a three and out and a defense not matching the intensity. You cannot play for a half. You have to understand, if you're the Cleveland Browns, that teams are going to take you serious now. You were seen, and to a degree you still will be respected as someone that you have to prepare for and give a full upfront effort in order to succeed against them. And the Browns missed that memo coming into out of the half. It's really that simple. For me, the team that was under the first half obviously did not show up in the second half because there was no emotion and no energy brought to the table along with execution.
And that's a problem. Let me ask you this, because you've been in the locker room recently. You played this halftime adjustment notion that people keep talking about. Given that the Browns have lost in the second half by a combined score of 55-3 in their three losses, which is staggering when you really put that in perspective, what's the deal with that? Are there a lot of halftime adjustments, or is it something? There's just not enough time to get in that in-depth, is there?
Oh, yeah. Well, Bill Belichick was one of the best at halftime adjustments. Okay, we're getting beat on. This is how we're going to combat it. And there is something to that. If you see something that you can exploit, you take advantage of it. And it was just a matter of time, guys, to think about it. You're matching Craig Roberson against Reggie Bush. Eventually, Reggie's going to win that matchup time and time again. And that all stemmed from the fact that you couldn't get anything from your four-man rush. So you're in a situation where you have to blitz guys. And if you're blitzing guys, now you're put in a situation where linebackers and safeties, who aren't the best of coverage guys in comparison to your corners, obviously, are now forced to cover skill players who have a better skill set than them. So granted, you took Calvin Johnson away, but this game was always going to come down from the offensive-defensive matchup of whose second-tier skill players would do better against the Browns. And obviously, judging from the results of yesterday, the Lions proved that their second-tier players were much better in regards to doing what was necessary to win the football game.
And you know, Gerard, it was in that second half, and I am not offering this as an excuse, but it was in those final two quarters that I think the Browns felt the absence of Jabal Sheard the most.
Yes.
Right? Because there was a guy that we were counting on coming back and playing, trying to recover from that knee injury. We know it wasn't a guaranteed thing. He was questionable. They were going to see what his status was and so forth, and then decided before game time that he wasn't going to go in there. They missed that a great deal. And it's clear, because we're not talking about just a component to this defense. We're talking about a guy who is playing about as well as anybody on that defense.
Right, and the thing that the Browns have going for them is the fact that you can come in waves. You bring Jabal Sheard, and next thing you know, Barkevious Mingo is fresh, and as an offensive tackle or guard, you don't want to have that possibility of facing a fresh Barkevious Mingo as opposed to one that's been playing a full four quarters. And Jabal Sheard gives you that extra wave and that relief on the defensive line as well. Now, Groves came back and he did some positive things, but yes, you certainly missed Jabal Sheard's presence out there, and it showed up because, again, the four-man rush did not do its job, and you had to rely on blitzing and zone dogs. And to the Lions' credit, they carved it up.
They certainly did. And one of the guys who carved up the Cleveland Browns, tight end Joseph Fouria, 3 targets, 3 catches, 3 touchdowns. How did he dominate the Browns so effectively in this game? And what does that mean for the secondary going forward? Was this more of an anomaly where they got some mismatches, or what they felt were mismatches, and exploited them?
Mismatch exploited. You have a situation where you have a small corner or a linebacker or a safety on a tight end. That's why you're going more to these 6'4", 6'5", 6'6", tight ends that can run like receivers. That's a physical mismatch, and Fourier was open. And the not so funny, if you're obviously rooting for the Browns like we are, is that Fourier, up to that point in time, had done absolutely nothing for the Detroit Lions. So credit again the Lions for seeing something and exploiting. That's what it's all about, finding a mismatch and exploiting it. And on our side, we didn't have that many mismatches to exploit because the offense obviously shut down. But I think it was more of a mentality of a young football team going into half with momentum, saying, you know what, we got this one. We're dominating this team. You can't think that way. You have to come out there with the mindset that, you know what, this game is not over till it says 0-0-0 on the clock with four quarters being played.
Gerard Cherry joining us, as he regularly does, here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. So this discussion of mindset, how far does it go regarding the rest of the team and the way it looks at Brandon Whedon, the way it looks at that defining play of that game, the interception with just under 5 minutes to go, and just the nature of that pick, as bad as and as ugly as it was, does that resonate with other players who now maybe have wavering confidence in Whedon?
Yes, it does resonate, because you went into the game somewhat with wavering confidence, Whedon, because of the fact of you were 0-2 with him, and Brian Hoyer was playing exceptionally well in comparison to Brandon Whedon. And then when you see the down and distance and situational football, and Brandon Whedon makes such a poor decision, You question, does this guy even understand the nature of what he's supposed to be doing as a quarterback? Because that's just a play that you don't make on any level. You are a first down situation. Why are you underhand and flipping casually a football out? And you say to yourself, you're costing my livelihood here, and you're costing this team a victory, and you can't just put it all on Brandon Whedon. Understand that, Vic? But to answer your question more succinctly, yes, you'll be lying to yourself if you don't shake your head and say, man, what will we, in the back of your mind, if Brian's not hurt, are we winning this football game? If Brian was a starter at the beginning of the season, are we 5-1, 6-0, or 4-2? Those things will cross your mind. At the same time, you got to weed it out of there, and then you have to say, you know what, I'm going to support whoever is the starting quarterback and move forward, because that's what the professionalism of you calls for. But yes, it is on your mind, and I've been in situations where a quarterback was struggling. I'm going to support him publicly and privately, but still, it weighs on you, and at night when you're talking to your missus or your significant other, it may slip out. We call that pillow talk. You shouldn't do it, but it takes place.
That sounds like a very specific example.
That sounds like some serious pillow talk there. Yes, indeed.
Are you punching that pillow, too, while the conversation is going on?
No comment.
Gerard, let me ask you this, because I watch it, and Josh Gordon continues to be impressive. Jordan Cameron didn't get as involved as I would have liked, but it seems like the Lions were trying to scheme against him, and he wasn't quite on the same page as Brandon Whedon. Have you seen anybody else in this passing game at the wide receiver position, whether it be Greg Little, whether it be Devon Bess, whether it be Travis Benjamin, that can step up and take some pressure off those guys down the field? Because you got Chris Obanaya getting 12 targets and catching 7 balls. You're not going to win with that happening.
You know, you're not going to stretch the field with that in a vertical offense, that's for sure, Nathan. And Greg Little showed some signs of promise yesterday, and you'd like to think that he's going to continue to get better as this season moves along, because he's going to have to just for the sake of his NFL career. Travis Benjamin has not been utilized, you can make the argument, enough in deep passing situations. And then you look at Devon Bess. And I hate to sell my brother out from Oakland, but I'm expecting more out of him. He's not giving me enough. It's just too many drops right now. You know what I mean? And he's going to have to do a much better job of being what we've advertised him to be, which is a sure-handed receiver.
Yeah, I think that's exactly the case, is that you worry about that. And if those questions linger, you know, it definitely carries over into everything you're doing. And I guess this is the last thing I want to ask you, Gerard, is the confidence level of players, which it seems right that the human part of us are all going to go there. And then it's the coaches. And it is the idea that you're preparing game plans. We know, what is this coaching staff, what is its signature quality supposed to be? Aggressiveness, attack oriented. And you wonder if you start to go into games now a little concerned about that. I know they can only be what they are. We know that North Turner calls a game a certain way. Rob Chudzinski believes a certain way in building a game plan and a playbook and so forth. And obviously Ray Horton on the defensive side, because it's all affected by this. If you start to question what your offense is going to do, and specifically your quarterback, it's going to affect everything else.
Yes, it is going to affect everything else, Vic. But here's the one positive we can take from this game, and I hope it's resonating in the locker room, and it's the following. You had this team, you were beating them by 10 points going into the halftime, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
And with that, you came out in the second half, you were lethargic, you didn't show any energy, and you assumed that you could just go out there and put your Browns helmet on and just win the football game. You know you left that one out there, and you know as a man on that football team that you could have won this game and you should have won this game. So, granted, there are no moral victories. I'm not going down that road, but this team now knows that it's going to take four full quarters of NFL football to win games. And granted, you were on a three-win winning streak. They're not easy. They don't come easy, and you're going to have to go out there and pay a price. We talk about it often. Pay the price. And that team was not willing to pay the price for four quarters yesterday, and now guys aren't doing interviews, and guys are upset because of their unwillingness to pay the price. And I'm sure as they look back on this game and say to themselves, dang, I wish I had paid that price.
All right, Gerard, that breaks it down, and we're going to pick this up again with you tomorrow and break it down even further. More depressing stuff coming your way. No, good time, though, with you. And enjoyed, again, your work on Browns Overtime, which airs on Fox Sports Ohio. Gerard Cherry and Michael Rega on that with yours truly. We still have to, hey, we got to do the shows, and we got to do this show, and we got to tell you what's going on, the good and the bad. So we give it to you all possible ways. We'll get into more of your tweets and any calls that might come up, 216-578-0850. You're listening to the Reaction Monday edition of Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty 40, ESPN 850, WKNR. Aren't you something to admire? 'Cause you shine something.